And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is the future. It's here, it's just unevenly distributed. Each of my guests is giving his view of the future that he sees today. My next guest is the father of supply-side economics. He's also the most quoted living author during the Reagan presidency. He now says, forget about supply and demand. He's got a new theory of capitalism that's revolutionary. We'll discuss his latest findings from his book, Knowledge and Power. George Gilder is the co-founder of the Discovery Institute. He's a techno-utopian intellectual and a Republican Party activist. His 1981 bestseller, Wealth and Poverty, advanced a practical and moral case for capitalism during the early months of the Reagan administration. Joining us from Massachusetts. Hi, George. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Oh, thanks so much for being our guest. Now, I found your book was just fascinating because you've moved away from supply and demand. You've absolutely thrown out Keynes. Well, I guess he was out to begin with. You've thrown out Adam Smith, and you've applied information theory that was first proposed by Claude Shannon to the economy. So connect the dots for us. How does information theory do a better job of explaining the economy than mere supply and demand?
Well, when you think of it, the Neanderthal in his cave had command of all the material and natural resources and physical appetites and desires that modern man possesses. All the changes have been changes of knowledge. I believe that understanding that capitalist economies are chiefly based on the accumulation of knowledge is central to a new economic that transcends debates over greed and distribution and that currently dominate our scene.
Well, they do. And woven into your theory is this role of surprise. So talk to us about what role does surprise play in your new theory?
Well, Albert Hirschman wrote years ago, and I quoted him in Wealth and Poverty, that creativity always comes as a surprise to us. If it didn't, we wouldn't need it. And socialism would work. And I was always, throughout Wealth and Poverty, I focused on the surprising inventions and innovations of entrepreneurship. And I was always aware that this theme conflicted in some way with the focus on equilibrium and arbitrage and economic order that had dominated economics ever since Adam Smith. And it wasn't until I read Claude Shannon, who developed the information theory behind the internet and the computer revolution, I understood that information, in Shannon's terms, is defined as surprise. If everything I tell you today you already know, zero information is transmitted. And Shannon developed the whole of computer science and network theory on the basis of this insight that information is fundamentally surprise.
All right. Well, I see that and I understand that. But you go on and you really flesh out Shannon's theory and talk at some very high levels about some topics that I wanted to get into. Specifically, most of us remember from the second law of thermodynamics about entropy. Everything moves towards entropy. And in most people's mind, the common vernacular, that's everything moving towards chaos. However, you really rely on entropy in this new theory. So explain high energy entropy and also low energy entropy and how that plays into it. And give us some feeling for how that communicates information.
What Shannon discovered how to calculate the formula for surprise in information. And he identified the surprise in information with the freedom of choice of the provider of the information. So the degree of information carried in a message is determined by the number of possible messages the transmitter could have chosen. And so freedom of choice is fundamental to Shannon information. And I believe that having freedom at the heart of information, moving to an economic model, you can incorporate freedom at the heart of the economic model. So now we have an economic model of capitalism that is based on a concept of freedom creativity coming as a surprise to us rather than on order and equilibrium.
All right. Now, that's very theoretical, and I like how you've applied Shannon's theory to the economy. But let's get practical for a moment for my listeners, if we can. Give us some examples of high entropy information that is transmitted through a low entropy conduit in our own day-to-day lives, George.
In communications, one of the rules is you need a low entropy carrier, that is, with no surprises in it, in order to bear high entropy, creative, surprising information. The reason is that you have to differentiate the message from the carrier at the other end. If the carrier, the wire, or the electromagnetic spectrum is changing all the time, then you can't differentiate the signal from the noise at the other end of the transmission. And in economics, if you have the governing structure, the rule of law, changing all the time. If you have EPA cruising in and declaring that all the CO2 emitted across the economy is a pollutant one day, and the president banning various forms of energy from week to week, and nationalizing much of the medical sector and imposing differential taxes on different kinds of behavior, you have a carrier that's full of noise. And so I believe that you need a predictable rule of law. You need a reliable government structure. You need reasonable courts that with a predictable outcome. You need stable families. You need a predictable money as a standard of value. All these low entropy carriers are what allow entrepreneurs to make new inventions and make long-term investments. And what happens when you have the government as producing all sorts of surprising new policies from day to day is the horizons of the economy shrink. What you get is a hypertrophy of finance. Profits in the economy migrate toward these short-term activities, adjusting to government policy rather than long-term activities, transforming the economy with new inventions and ideas.
My guest is George Gilder, author of the new book, Knowledge and Power, The Information Theory of Capitalism and How It's Revolutionizing Our World. And George, there was so much in those last answers that I just don't know where to start. But I'm going to start. I'm going to start with, believe it or not, we're in California. I'm going to start there because in your book, you sort of demonize California, and I find it ironic reading your book that California, which is the home to so many venture capitalists and a state that really should embrace information theory, it's held up as a negative example in your book. So let's go to the specifics. You talk about a specific bill, the Global Warming Solutions Act, which was Assembly Bill 32, way back in 2010. You said that that places California on the wrong path for growth and innovation. Now, a lot of wealthy California entrepreneurs from the high-tech industry supported that bill. How could they be so misguided, and how could that be leading us down the path to ruin?
I believe that venture capital is the most valuable source of funds in our entire economy. About close to a quarter of all our GDP and probably 65% of all the market cap in American corporations comes from companies funded by venture capitalists. And I'm kind of a sperm lover because I have been celebrating the venture capitalists of Silicon Valley for decades. And constantly visit there and know most of them. And so I really was shocked to see them suddenly angling for government subsidies and government mandates to buy their silly solar product. It's just amazing that this crucial source of catalytic capital producing profits and jobs and revenues for the entire economy is now angling for tax subsidies. Silicon Valley wants us taxpayers in Massachusetts to be funding their new solar baubles and perpetual motion machines that they think can run the energy economy of the future.
By solar bobbles and perpetual motion machines, of course, you're referring to Solyndra and to A123, two failed organizations that the government guaranteed loans for, and these companies subsequently failed.
Sort of, but those are the most visible cases and not really the worst cases. There are just hundreds of companies in Silicon Valley that are would not exist except for their belief that they emit less CO2. And the CO2 is not a pollutant. It does not cause significant global warming. There's no global warming crisis. The whole premise of hundreds and hundreds of companies, thousands of small ventures, are based on this delusion that somehow we face a climate crisis. And it's a catastrophe for our economy. When venture capitalists have to be focusing on reality, or they no longer perform their role. And when they're focusing on political fantasies, they become destructive to the economy and a distraction to our enterprise.
So you're saying that all of this flap that we're having right now over global warming is leading us down the wrong path, and it's diverting attention, it's diverting funds away from real economic growth and what you term in the book, surprise.
That's right. This is all an effort to substitute government power for the knowledge of entrepreneurs. Venture capitalists in Silicon Valley can't make these energy projects, what I call perpetual motion machine projects, work. So they summon Obama, they summon Washington to mandate that people buy their defective goods. And this is a real debauchery. My book's called Knowledge and Power for a reason. This is the exercise of government power to eclipse the knowledge of entrepreneurs, which is distributed all throughout the society. And to have an effective economy, you got to distribute the capital in proportion to the knowledge, that rather than concentrate it in one place and issue mandates to the rest of the society.
All right, that makes sense. My guest is George Gilder. George, let's turn then from the micro to the macro, if we can. Use your theory, your information theory, and do some compare and contrast for me between the economy of China versus the economy of the United States, because pundits today say that China is expected to overtake the United States as the number one economy in the world by 2020. And I find that's kind of interesting, given their form of government and given your theory about low entropy and high entropy. And I look at some specifics, George, and I'm confused, because here's China that's allegedly stealing our intellectual property, which seems to me would put them at very high entropy and on a fast track to accelerate the innovation and really lead them down the path. And yet I look at their government, and the rule of law is quite the opposite. In fact, there's a story this week about a factory owner who was taken prisoner by Chinese workers because he wanted to move a quarter of his production from China to India. And the Chinese workers held him prisoner because they were afraid they weren't going to get their wages, which is very common in China.
I think a lot of what we hear about China is misleading. I think that China has all kinds of things that are going on in China. It's a vast country, but its essential strategy for success was to create free zones. These free zones were attractive to entrepreneurs all over China. So the Chinese entrepreneurs all migrated to Shenzhen and Shanghai and Guangdong and all these various free zones. And that's where the creative activity came. And it's a tremendous cauldron of high entropy manufacturing and creativity. And this issue about stealing intellectual property from the United States, this happens. But I think there's too much stress on this. The United States, almost all our technologies, as we arose as an industrial power, were filched in one way or another from England and Scotland and Germany and other such places. This is the way intellectual innovations propagate around the world. And I don't think China has many ugly features, but I believe that they are essentially a capitalist power. And we shouldn't be complacent, because we are abandoning capitalism while they embrace it.
My guest is George Gilder, author of the new book, Knowledge and Power. All right, George, let's turn back to the United States, if we can, and apply your economic theory to something that happens every single day on Wall Street. That's high-frequency trading. Talk to me about how high-frequency trading fits into your new economic model.
I think high-frequency trading is almost zero contribution to our economy and represents a betrayal of Wall Street, of its real role in finding major new technologies and innovations and potential investments. Wall Street is focused on efficiency. And as Peter Drucker always said, efficiency is a bad goal. Its effectiveness is the real goal. It's better not to do things right, always focus on doing things efficiently. It's better to identify the right things to do. And high-frequency trading is really almost worthless. It slightly increases liquidity, but it's chiefly a way of increasing the returns of this hypertrophied financial sector we have. But the cause of financial hypertrophy is the closing down of the horizons of the economy by mazes of regulation, litigation, legislation, which nobody reads and which propagate literally millions of rules across the economy in a way that can ultimately cause economic sclerosis in America.
Well, George, you're one of the great proponents of free market capitalism. And in your new book, Knowledge and Power, you talk about the 2008 recession as the first in history that was caused by economists. Now, that's a scathing indictment. What do you mean by that?
I think economists still believe that you can substitute government power for the knowledge of entrepreneurs. And that assumption is deadly to economic growth and progress. All economic progress is comprised of knowledge. When we make transactions across the economy, as Thomas Sowell pointed out decades ago in his book, Knowledge and Decisions, we're transacting our differential knowledge. And when government pretends that this knowledge isn't important, what's important is raw power embodied in government money creation and government spending and government mandate, you can actually bring an economy to a halt. And that illusion resulted in TARP, and it resulted in all these vast exercises of government power designed to end the financial crisis, but which in fact prolonged its effects, just as all high entropy government activity during the Great Depression turned the stock market crash into a 10-year economic slump.
Well, George, I want to take this one step farther, if I can, please, because you write in the book that financial crises are inevitable to agree. Now, I'm comfortable with that, but some aren't. So what would you say to people who point out that we've had an unprecedented number of crises since 2000? I mean, the millennium bug, the dot-com bust, the real estate bust, the financial meltdown. How do you explain that in light of your new economic theory?
I believe that Nancy Olson really put his finger on it decades ago when he wrote a book called The Rise and Decline of Nations. And he sees that at a certain point in the history of nations, they become so encrusted with special interests and government programs and gigantic manipulative bureaucracies and that they no longer can accommodate change and progress. And we are approaching that point in the United States, and it has resulted in ever more government actions as a remedy. And they have always made the problem worse. And what I show in Knowledge and Power is that because the economy is chiefly a noosphere, that is, based on ideas and knowledge, it can change as fast as people's minds can change. And when policies change, you can turn around an economy, regardless of its debts and its mistakes, within weeks. This whole idea that economic problems, whether inflation back in the 1980s when Reagan assumed office, or unemployment or debt, are intractable and can't be changed. It's just wrong. There's cutting back government and regularizing our policies and opening up the horizons of freedom is all upside. There's not great cost in cutting back government.
A very optimistic note. An economy can revive as quickly as minds change. My guest is George Gilder, author of Knowledge and Power. George, I want to change it up on you if I can for just a minute, please, because I saw you debate the venture capitalist Peter Thiel on whether or not we've advanced over the last 25 years. And you take the approach that, yes, we have advanced over those 25 years. I'm going to take Peter's side of the argument, if I can, just for our discussion here, and say that we haven't. And I want to look at a variety of industries where there's been very little significant progress. Transportation, energy, gene therapy. I mean, by now we're supposed to all have flying cars and jetpacks, right? So briefly, give us your argument about why we are progressing and tie that into your whole theory of surprise, please.
These trajectories that were imagined earlier in the century, you know, where we're going to have flying cars and all sorts of transformations of our bodies, were low entropy, really. These were predicted on the basis of a misunderstanding of the realities of our world. And what instead happened was the development of information theory and all the transformations that have stemmed from the rise of the computer industry and its spread. And that has been the great triumph of this era, has been epitomized by the smartphone, which is a little computer you hold in your hand that's more powerful than the supercomputers of 30 years ago, and much more valuable because it allows all sorts of communications capabilities that the supercomputers couldn't possibly offer. Transportation has come vastly more convenient because of the development of information tools. And, you know, there are 500,000 people in the air at any time at lower cost than ever before, adjusted for inflation. And the people on in the air are often on the air, too. They can create whole offices or entertainment centers at their seats. And, you know, there are just all sorts of advances going on at a tremendous pace. And I believe the next big advance will come from an understanding that the human body is not chiefly a chemical or physical phenomenon that can be treated by bombarding it with chemicals and pills, but is a programmable platform and can be manipulated by programming the marrow of our bodies. There are just lots of advances along the path of information theory, and indeed physics itself, which has always been sort of regarded to be the epitome of the materialist discipline, is now itself chiefly focused on information theory. There's something called quantum information theory, which is the leading edge of physical research today.
Well, George, let me interrupt you and ask you about something that's currently in the news then, the Supreme Court's decision this week that human genes cannot be patentable. How is that going to impact the advancement of science, particularly in regards to our own bodies?
I certainly don't think human genes should be patentable. That's ridiculous. That was really based on the time when computer technology was so limited that finding genes and defining them was an enormously arduous and almost accidental process. But today, increasingly, we're developing systematic tools for finding genes and connecting them to various aspects of our bodies and minds. And so patenting genes was really not a good idea ever, and it's certainly not a good idea today. You can patent various techniques that people might use to manipulate genes or various real inventions relating to biotech should be patentable, but not the actual genetic phenomenon itself. We've really overdone it with patents. We've got the idea that giving everybody a monopoly on their ideas is the way to progress. And I think there are far too many patents awarded, particularly in areas like software, which are very incremental, and where new patents are related to old patents in various complex ways that make it very hard to sort out the actual innovation. And business process patents, I mean, just absurdity. Business processes is how businesses compete. You don't need a 17-year monopoly on your business process. We've really allowed intellectual property to be debauched by lawyers, really. It's, our whole society is, the sources of knowledge in the society are being twisted by litigation and legal thinking of an opportunistic and, I think, obscurantist kind.
All right, my guest is George Gilder, author of the new book, Knowledge and Power, The Information Theory of Capitalism and How It's Revolutionizing Our World. George, what did you get out of writing this book?
I was just really thrilled to discover that there's a way to incorporate creativity in the center of economic models. All of economics has been afflicted with this mimicry of physics. They all want to create a determinist model of which seeks order and equilibrium. And nothing I see when I travel around the world making my investments in new companies seeking new technologies has anything to do with order and equilibrium. It's all the accumulation of knowledge and the extension of knowledge. The processes of learning, the learning curve, is really a central function of economic progress. And it was just delightful to me to discover that there's a whole new way to describe capitalism that doesn't put equilibrium at its center, some mystical invisible hand, but puts freedom at the center, the freedom of choice that's intrinsic to the creation of information and the consummation of the gains of knowledge. Profit is entropy. Profit is the upside surprise of creative enterprise. And most of the key factors of capitalism turn out to be perfectly aligned with this theory of computation and networking that's at the same time sustaining our global creation of wealth.
Well, it's a fascinating read, and it's probably destined to become the new Bible of economics for the 21st century. My guest has been George Gilder. George, if you've piqued the interest of some of my listeners, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
www.discovery.org. I'm a co-founder of the Discovery Institute, and www.gildertech.com is another way or gilder.com. www.gilder.com also gives you a way to follow up.
Oh, that is great. George, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your very serious questions. I appreciate it.
All right, George. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.